Hello, 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 everyone. My name is Michelle Zeman. I am the host of Safe Space, the ABA podcast, here to bring you another fabulous episode. Before we dive right into it, please be sure to listen to those two code words for your free CEUs. I am super excited about today's guest, and I'm actually really excited about today's topic too, because, you know, in today's world, we are doing a lot of ABA online. You know, we've done a lot of, you know, telehealth parent training, telehealth supervision, you know, and it's really cool to be able to dive right into that. And I have a really great guest that can talk and really speak to this. So please help me welcome Ms. Lauren Nava. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everyone. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so excited to have you on here. You know, it's so funny. We just met in person
like
about a week and a half ago.
Yes, so which was really cool.
Yeah, so super, super cool. I'm so excited to be talking to you today a little bit about telehealth supervision and how you got, you know, how you got into it. So let's just go ahead and dive in. Tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you become a BCBA, and how did the timing of COVID shape your path?
Yeah, so I became a BCBA during the pandemic, which was a very challenging time. But I was like very eager to take that on. I felt like it was a challenge I had accepted or wanted to accept. But yeah, so I transitioned from like an in-person. I'm from California. So like in California, we have like mid-tier level. So I was a mid-tier supervisor without my BCBA. And then so I was already like getting that that supervision exposure. However, when I got my BCBA, it was like a crucial time because it was like right when COVID was happening. Everything was hybrid at the time with selective in-person. So I felt like I had to learn quickly to like adapt to what the situation was, but I felt overall it was like a really great opportunity for me to develop my skills in telehealth and build really strong relationships with my families remotely. However, at that time, I was working with within the same state, so I was able to have like a relationship with my families. Like I already had built that rapport with my families, so I was just like trying to prove and build their trust at this part, right? Because it's like going from in-person to remote, the thought of it, especially with like every client's needs, I felt parents had a lot of hesitation. So I was constantly like, hey, like, let's meet, let's talk, let's figure this out. And I felt that approach, not being so intrusive, that approach really helped me get to where I am today.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, now that we're in a world where telehealth is a lot more like normalized, you know, it's really cool that you were able to kind of take this unpredictable time in history and in life and be able to sort of like make your own into the BCBA.
Definitely.
Yeah. What was it like entering the field during such a crazy time in just the universe in general?
Yeah, like I felt at first it was a little bit challenging because, like I said, like we were able to have some in-person visits, but it was very limited. Like it was twice a week, or like you could only see two clients. Well, first it was one client a week, and then it like systematically increased, but it took some time. So I felt at first like, oh my gosh, like this is like very overwhelming because like you have to prioritize one client a week. But luckily, I did have some clients that were like 100% remote, like the tech was providing remote services as well. So I didn't have many clients to like choose from at first. But then once we kind of systematically started like coming back into the world, you know, again, we still had some limitations, but it was just like figuring out, okay, what client am I going to prioritize? What client am I not going to prioritize this week? But like I felt, you know, considering the need, right? So I was like, okay, this client has severe aggression. This client has severe tantrums, you know, like I need to prioritize, or this client is having a challenging week. So I took like other factors into consideration. And that kind of helped me like figure out which clients to see in person. However, you know, the clients that I didn't get to see, I took into consideration, like, what could I what could I, how can I prioritize my supervision this week with them? What's going to benefit them? And I thought like pre-planning all that ahead of time really helped me. And to this day, like when I do my schedule, I like to do my schedule for the month because of that. Because I, again, like if I have a client that has a report due, anything like that, I take all that into consideration.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, there's a lot of things that you have to consider, right? Like, you know,
Definitely.
re-ops, assessments, but then also too, like for some of us who have clients who display like higher levels or higher rates of behavior, you know, especially behaviors that are dangerous to themselves and others around them, I bet that has to be pretty hard to navigate as a supervisor through telehealth, you
Oh,
know?
most definitely. Most definitely.
Yeah, absolutely, you know. But that being said too, you know, when you first got into telehealth supervision, how did you initially approach the idea?
Well, I felt like I really needed to get parents' buy-in. Like that was the big thing, right? Because again, parents had doubts. So, I worked on for each of my client coming up with a schedule that embedded their goals. And propose that to the family. And then, you know, little by little, like I couldn't work on every single goal, right? Like we had to like make it more realistic. So I sat with the parent, created a schedule, focus on the things that they wanted to focus on, and kind of built from there. So then each week I would look at where we were. And then, you know, if the client and staff were able to add more, then we would add more. But that's kind of like where I started. And that's what I felt was very helpful. Because I think that like if you do too much at once and have these unrealistic expectations or, you know, propose these unrealistic expectations for the family, you know, you're kind of it's not gonna work. It's not gonna work. You have to be realistic. That's the thing. And that's the hard thing because we can't predict the future. We don't know things like we don't know everything, right? But I felt meeting with the family and really getting hearing their values and seeing what they wanted out of our services and how to build from that from, you know, a remote supervision or remote, you know, a remote, what am I trying to say? A remote approach is can be challenging. It can be really challenging.
I can only imagine. And you know, you mentioned buy-in, and this is something that I think every single BCBA struggles with at some point in their career. You know, trying to get parent buy-in, trying to, you know, kind of see like their perspective too and how we can help them buy into what we're doing. That being said, how did you navigate that buy-in when you were doing more of the remote or when you are doing remote services?
So I really emphasize parent participation from that initial meeting. So when I get a new client, my first thing is, you know, meet with the parent first, one-on-one, hear their values, hear what they want out of our services, and then kind of like explain the process. You know, a lot of times we get families that have these unrealistic expectations, and it's just being transparent at first. And when I find that I'm transparent and you know, I share with them like this is the process. This is how what we're gonna do to get there. They're more I get more of their buy-in. Like they're more like okay, like I appreciate that, and I'm really big on being transparent with these families. But I also like emphasize that parent participation is crucial because if parents don't participate, there's not gonna be a huge change, right? And that's what they're wanting. So I will sit with them and say, hey, like how can you meet with me on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis, and again, I take into consideration what their treatment, you know, is stating. Like if it's a 1 hour parent training each week, or like what they're authorized for, basically. And I explain that to them. And then when I explain that to them, I sit with them and say, hey, let's try this. And sometimes they're like, hey, can we try once a month? Okay, let's try once a month. And then because they see that it's working, or they see that like, hey, like I'm noticing changes in my child. They're more motivated to participate, and I find that approach the best approach for me that has made it very helpful to be remote.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, I can definitely imagine that, especially when you're, you know, when you can't be in the home with them just because of certain restrictions like COVID, or if, you know, you live in another state, that's definitely, that's hard to handle. So I can definitely understand that.
Definitely.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what a typical week looks like for you when you're providing telehealth supervision.
Excuse me. Sorry. So my daily goal is to supervise 2 to 3 clients via telehealth, of course. And then, you know, I try to keep a consistent schedule when I see my staff. However, I know that's not like realistic because there's cancellations and things like that. But then I'll notify my staff like, hey, I'm going to join on this day and this day this week. However, keep in mind that if there's a cancellation, that might change. So like all my staff are aware of that. But like during my sessions, I definitely observe, take notes, review goals, collect IOA, do check-ins with the parents and the staff. And I really try to model strategies and techniques to the RBT. Now that can be sometimes very challenging because obviously like I'm very limited on what I could do, but I do find like using my own resources. So like, you know, I have toys and things like that, that like gain the client's attention, but I'm like constantly trying to interact and making it as if I was there. Like that's ultimately my goal. Although I'm not there, I try to ask questions, hear their questions, give them that give myself that opportunity to ask questions and in the family as well.
Absolutely. I feel like that's crucial in our field. You know, we need to
Definitely.
Be able to listen and ask those questions and, you know, not only like, you know, expect them to give us like specific rationale, but we also need to give rationale as to like why we might give the feedback that we give.
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, and so I know too, when it comes to like modeling strategies and stuff on telehealth, I don't know how many people that are listening can relate to this, but it can be a little bit hard, you know, especially when it comes to like, I'm thinking a lot about like behavior reduction procedures. I can definitely see that being a little bit harder because, you know, you might not have somebody who could potentially engage in those behaviors, and you like try to model it on the camera. How have you been able to successfully model strategies for your technicians?
So this is going to sound really funny, but I'll use like a stuffed animal sometimes, especially if my staff, like if I'm noticing, because it can be overwhelming. A behavior's happening, your supervisor's in your ear, the parents watching, right? So
yeah.
Like my big thing is like, let's let the client de-escalate, right? And then like we work through it and then debrief, right? So then like during that debrief time, I'll, you know, be like, hey, like I'll, if it's a quick discussion, I'll use the stuffed animal and like model like what I'm referring to. And I do find that to be a very helpful because a lot of times just saying it, especially if like we're after like we're de- like an episode just happened of a behavior, you know, the staff isn't processing, right? Especially
yeah.
if they're a little bit like new. So I find like the stuffed animal is helpful because, you know, I'll model what I'm doing. However, depending on, you know, the intensity of the behavior, I'll ask the staff, hey, like, would you like to set up like a one-on-one meeting? And I'll make time to meet with them and kind of like ask them more detailed questions, and make sure that I give them that opportunity to like, to talk to me. Cause that's very necessary. Like you need to be approachable for your staff. Like they need to feel comfortable and they need to be able to like talk to you and tell you what's working and what's not working. So I
yeah.
definitely try to offer that to my staff.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I feel like that's definitely something when we're looking at supervising, you know, especially because our technicians are the ones that are going into the homes or going into the centers or going into, you know, these places and whatnot. You know, we want to be able to still have that really strong rapport with our technicians, even though we're not necessarily physically there to physically model, physically guide, physically show them exactly what that looks like. What kind of tips can you give to a supervisor who is working telehealth on just building rapport with staff?
Yeah. So like the staff is built, like the supervisor is building staff or building rapport with the staff. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yes.
Yeah. So I am, again, very big on that initial meeting. outside of the session first, giving them that room to talk and like ask them questions and have them have the opportunity to ask me questions and go over anything that like maybe in training that they like just reviewed in training that they had questions on. And I usually schedule like about an hour with them. And sometimes we get staff, I get staff that like you utilize the full hour and sometimes I don't. But I do think that like initial meeting is very necessary because you'll learn so much about where that tech is. And you have that, you know, that room of that like avail that time available for them to ask questions or concerns. And sometimes a lot of times they'll have, you know, they have prepared questions and it's like great. And then sometimes you get the staff that like, you know, they're a little bit nervous, which I get it, right? It's not an easy job. So
No.
I get why they're nervous. So I get to like, you know, kind of talk them through like this is the plan. This is what we're going to do the first week of services. This is what we're going to do the second week. But yeah, I typically try to go over like what my expectations are for them and I ensure that it's not like high expectations. Like I really focus on them building that rapport first and collecting like, you know, like just data on behaviors that they observe during the building rapport process. But typically, when I do that, they feel like, oh, okay, like they're relieved. It's a sense of relief.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, especially because these are people who are working with our clients every single day, going into the homes. You know, one of the things that I try to tell my supervisees and my technicians is that you get this bigger view than I do. I get like, you know, 10 to 20% of that view. You get the other 80 to 100% of that view, and then parents get the biggest view of all, which is 100% of the time afterwards, you know. Outside of school, outside of ABA services, outside of just services in general, you know, we have this like very small scope, but we want you to know that we do support everything that you're doing because you're going in and helping our children at the end and our clients at the end of the day.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something else that I definitely emphasize when I meet with these families and these staff. You know, I tell the family, you know your child more than anyone. You know, like you are the number one person to your child. And I said, so I want to know like everything. Like I want to like make sure that like we aren't, you know, we're coming in and we're respecting your values. 'Cause that's ultimately how you're going to build that trust with that family is like by, you know, respecting their values and getting their insight.
Absolutely. Respecting their values, understanding what's socially significant for them and their child. And also just, you know, being compassionate, coming in with an open mind and a compassionate heart. I feel like, you know, without compassion, we really have lost the value of ABA as a whole. And, you know, when we come in with that compassionate point of view, compassionate heart in our and compassionate and individualized, you know, scope. That's where we can bring the most high quality ABA that we can.
Agreed, 100%. And I feel that's what I'm constantly doing. I'm constantly proving to these families like I am compassionate, I care. I want them to know that I care because I'm a mom myself and my theory is I want to treat my families like I would want someone to treat my children or my family, right? Like it's that respect. And I think sometimes, you know, not speaking for like every piece of it, but I think sometimes we kind of miss those things. And I think like maybe becoming a parent has maybe shaped that more for me and made me like want that more. But I've always been passionate and compassionate about this field, which is, you know, why I'm here. But I feel it's grown because now I as a parent, like I understand, you know, the clinician's perspective, but I also understand the parent's perspective. And I feel like that has really shaped my what I want or like, you know, like shaped how I feel when I'm like serving these families.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you're working with a variety of families and you've got this, you know, like kind of major barrier with the telehealth because of the fact of, and it's not telehealth that's the barrier, it's COVID that's the barrier. But that being said, you've got this barrier that's present. And, you know, kind of on that note too, because, you know, when it comes to barriers, we always have to address them. We always have to look at like what are our barriers and how do we problem solve. So that being said, what kinds of adjustments did you have to make early on in order to prove families that telehealth can in fact work?
Well, you know, definitely explaining the effectiveness of telehealth, you know, pointing out to the families, like, out that like what we can get out of a telehealth service, right? So like explaining, like, you know, you could see me more, like I'll be able to join more frequently rather than in person, because in person there's challenges, right? Like we have to commute. However, I don't say all of that, but like, you know, I just try to prove that by being in session frequently. But definitely, like setting up that initial meeting, one-on-one with the family, and then, you know, getting, you know, learning about the family, learning about the child, learning about what parents want to get out of our services, and then, you know, creating, and by doing that, I like share with them my plan, you know, hey, like, you know, this is what sessions are going to consist of the first 2 weeks with the staff. But then eventually we'll create a session schedule. And like, I definitely want your input. And then every time I meet with my family, so like, let's say that's like the initial meeting. But then every time I meet with my families, I ask, how are sessions going? What are you liking? What are you not liking? Asking them questions about how the child is doing outside of our sessions, if they're able to maintain the skills that they've generalized, and then making sure that my families know what we're working on, because I want them to be involved and I want them to like work on these skills outside of session. But then, you know, I also do have my families that like I'll have track things right outside of session. So like, you know, discussing that and going over, you know, behaviors, the ABC data, you know, things that they're seeing. But by taking this, like, I feel it's like a personalized approach. I feel like I'm able to establish a very strong relationship with the families through telehealth and, you know, proving that like this whole telehealth approach is valuable and effective. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like a first date. You go on a first date and you get to know, right, each other.
Yeah.
But that's what I feel it is. It's like you want them to be comfortable with you. You don't want them to be intimidated by you. And I just hope that's what I hope, like, when my families get to know me or that initial meeting, that like I want them to feel comfortable and I want them to like see that, you know, I care and that I take into consideration their values.
Absolutely. I feel like without that peace of mind and without like doing that, we're kind of like getting away from the heart, and that's
exactly. Something
we need to have, that heart there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cause I wouldn't want, like, you know, again, as a mom, I wouldn't want, you know, someone coming in and like, not like knowing, you know, what my values are, or not knowing, you know, what I care about when they work with my child. So that's where my mind goes when I meet with these families.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, so, and that's crucial. That's crucial at the end of the day. Yeah. So, and also one thing that I was curious about, because I know that you have, you know, you have had to do the limitations of your in-person visits. How did rotating and spacing out those sessions and like prioritizing them affect your client's progress overall?
I'll be honest, like at first, it was a little overwhelming because I felt like I could be doing more and I was very limited. So I did go through like kind of, you know, like a time where I was like, what could I do differently? And I was constantly like, I sometimes am a little bit of a perfectionist when it comes to work things. So like, I constantly felt like, what could I be doing like more of? But I'm really grateful for the families during that time that I worked with, because they were very understanding of the situation. And I think like at that time, COVID was so like, it was very serious. Like everybody was so scared. So like me limiting my in-person visits was mostly accepted, right? Except when my clients did have like big behaviors. But also I was actually pregnant. I also became pregnant like during that time too. So like my families were really concerned. They're like, oh, like, yeah, we definitely don't want you to get COVID, right? So I was very fortunate in that time. Like to have that. But I always doubted myself because again, I felt like I could be doing more, but I did overall, like I felt very challenged. But again, I think me just checking in with the family, checking in with the staff at that time was the best thing I could do because I felt if I didn't, I don't know. I don't know what would have happened, but I just, again, it's that communication. Like communication is key for everything. And I felt during that time, I just had to communicate and make sure. And that really helped me get through that. But yeah, it was definitely a challenge.
Oh, I can only imagine. I mean, you know, just having to deal with that. And, you know, you have this other thing, you know, pregnancy, you know, making sure that you're not getting sick. Cause if you get sick with COVID, then who knows what could happen. It's like all the things, you know, so you've got a lot of things going on and it's too much at times.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and drop our first code word of the episode. And it's the word that we've been saying a lot, and that is COVID. So COVID being spelled COVID. That is COVID. All right. Now let's kind of jump into just getting creative in your telehealth supervisions. So how did you get creative with your online resources and materials to make sessions that much more engaging for your clients?
So I want to say when I first started, I definitely utilized a lot of YouTube and I discovered so many things on YouTube. Like one of the things is I didn't know that people read stories on YouTube. Like that was fascinating to me. And it was funny at first because like, you know, we would check out a book at a library or whatever and be like, oh, let's make sure it's on YouTube so we could like have like, you know, a circle time, story time kind of thing. But I felt like YouTube was very helpful. Like YouTube, there's story time, there's yoga, there's movement break music videos. There's like so many like things that you could utilize in a session. So like YouTube was probably like my top. However, I didn't want, obviously, I don't want to like utilize so much screen time in a session, right? So I thought like, what other resources could I use? And I definitely found Teachers Pay Teachers to have a lot of like really creative things. And I think like since then, their stuff has definitely like evolved and it's more like there's like more telehealth things. But I would like look at Teachers Pay Teacher things and kind of see like, hey, like, could I create something like that? But make it like telehealth, like, you know, like utilize it for telehealth because a lot of the things like you need to be like in person, right? So what I would do is I would create like visuals and like share on my screen. And I thought that was like really helpful, especially if I was like wanting to generalize a skill and we would use, you know, like I would make a document and add material needed to like generalize that skill. And then like acting, I felt like acting was like a really big thing, like especially problem, like if I had a client that had problem solving, and to this day, I still do that. Like I'll, you know, be an actress and I'll act things out and see if like, and have them like identify, you know, if we're doing like problem solving, identify the problem. And then like figuring out, hey, what games can I make like interactive? Can I play? So like one of them was like Uno. And to this day, I still do that. Like Uno, like, you know, I'm the third person at the table and like, you know, we're playing Uno and it's fun. It's fun to be involved like that. But yeah, I've definitely, I felt like I like was very like, I got creative with my own like persona and adopting a playful like Miss Rachel style that like incorporated each client's unique preferences and interests. So I was like able to, you know, build a connection with my clients that way. And I felt it definitely helped them be motivated when I joined. So then when I would run a program or try to like generalize something, they were like, oh, like, you know, like I want, you know, whatever it was that, you know, we had, like, if there was a song that they liked, and I'm not a singer, I'm not a singer at all. I'm not a Miss Rachel singer. Miss Rachel has a great voice. So aww. I don't have that, but like they liked it, you know, I made it like, I tried to make it fun. So, I felt it was like my moment to shine, when I was on.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and it's so funny too, because, so one of the things that I used to do is I used to actually work as a telehealth BCBA, and I did direct sessions. I didn't do supervision. Yeah, I didn't do like any of those. I didn't like necessarily look at supervision. I did more parent training, and I did more of like a client model as well. Mm-hmm. And I can say YouTube is definitely a really good resource. I found that to be a really good resource. I also found, have you ever heard of Boom Learning before, or Boom Cards?
No, no.
Oh my goodness. Boom Learning was so cool. I'll have to share this with you out, outside of the podcast.
Please do.
Yeah, because let me tell you, I used to do Boom Cards with some of my clients, and what we would do is I would send over a link to their account, and they would log in, and then they would go through each of the cards. And it could be something like, for example, if they're working on identification of something, you know, there was a card and you just click the picture, boom, it's correct, you know, or, hey, if it's wrong, then, you know, it's not correct. You know, so, you know, it would give us like a little reminder. And they, it's very similar to Teachers Pay Teachers in the sense of like, there's so many different subjects, so many different categories. I think there was like one set, if I remember correctly, there was like things from the VBMAP, which some of my clients were on VBMAP. Yeah, exactly. So it was so cool to be able to like kind of see that and kind of see how we could break that down too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, very cool. Please share. I love stuff like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So yeah. And Teachers Pay Teachers was and still is a lifesaver for telehealth resources and in-person resources. Let me tell you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, another resource that I like is actually education.com. And yes. I like, yes, because you can make worksheets too.
Yes, you
I
can.
I love that. I love that. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Education.com was such a good one for me during that job too, because if I wanted my client to go on like a specific like level or a specific area, I could easily give them the access to be able to do that. And that I always found so, so cool and unique. So,
definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's so cool. And
I'm excited for your resource too. Like, I can't wait to like log on and like, look what I can make, or, you know, like that's exciting.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, I love Boom Learning. I love it so much. And it was just such a good resource, especially like, you know, just doing that during the pandemic. And also too, I did it with some of my clients that I did end up providing supervision for, and mm-hmm. had to walk the RBT through like, okay, this is what you need to do. You might have to toggle some of the sounds and stuff, just because sometimes some of our clients would actually like stem off of the whoops sound whenever they would do something yeah. wrong. So I would have to teach them like, okay, you know, you have to toggle the off sound, you know, make sure that, you know, there's no specific sounds that are associated. Just make sure that you are focusing on like, you know, the cards that you have essentially. So it's a great resource. I'll have to send that to you for sure.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. Of course. So kind of on the line of Miss Rachel. So tell us about your Miss Rachel moment, and how did that influence your approach to ABA via telehealth?
Yeah. So it's funny because like I like bought like puppets. So I felt like once I realized that like some of my clients liked that Miss Rachel like approach, I was like, hey, like what can I do with this? Right. So I went and bought puppets and like, you know, I had more like, I did more like, and again, it wasn't every client that liked that approach, but when I found that like that was reinforcing to some of my clients, I was like, hey, let's make this work. And I felt that really helped my clients build rapport with me, because I think when you're not in person, there's somebody in person, right? Like sometimes like they don't really care like that you're on screen, right? But if they see that like you're trying to engage with them and like you're trying to like engage with things that they enjoy, I found that it was like very helpful. So I realized that incorporating like client preferences was a key to building engagement and rapport. So I started like, you know, singing their favorite songs, despite my questionable voice, and like presenting preferred toys and games to interact with them in a more meaningful way. And by tailoring my approach to each client's unique interests, I was able to create a more personalized and effective ABA experience and in a virtual setting. So, yeah, I felt, and to this day, I still use my Miss Rachel moment. Like, I have clients that love to have puppet parties or like have dance parties, and I'll stand up and dance with them, and yeah, they love it. So I definitely tried my best to be as interactive as possible in my supervision sessions.
Absolutely. When it comes to that interactive portion, I feel like that's so vital to have because, you're behind a screen and
Yeah.
that can be really hard sometimes,
Oh, definitely.
Oh my
Yeah.
goodness. I've even like I had a I actually have a client where, saying hi to him on the telehealth is like it's extremely aversive. It's just because like I'm not physically there. The moment I see him, though, he's all over me. Miss Michelle, I'm so excited. I missed you so much. It's like, I just saw you on the computer 3 days ago, but I missed you too. It's like so cute. It's so cute. But it's like, it's one of those things where like that's where that aversion can really, really come into. So you
Definitely.
have to be creative. You have to be playful. Because if you're not, have you truly built rapport?
Exactly. Especially if you want, to work on generalizing things. I definitely think, right? Because when we write goals too, like generalizing goals, right? We think, okay, settings, but telehealth is definitely a setting. So, what I really try to push for that too. Like, hey, this is an additional setting. So
Yeah, that is very true. That's actually a good way to look at it too, because we might have our clients that work in home or go into a specific clinic or something like that. But being able to generalize a skill, whether that be somebody with them face to face or being able to talk to them through a video platform or a phone call or something along those lines, and they're able to still kind of perform that same skill, that's huge. That's
definitely.
really important for generalization.
100%.
Yes, absolutely. Let's talk a little bit about RBT. So one thing that we talked about, before is, you've had some RBTs from the very start, even, pre-COVID. And that being said, what's been key to maintaining that kind of loyalty and, respect even?
Yeah, so I believe RBTs and BTs are like truly like underappreciated in our field. So I like try to make it a point to my staff and like show them that like how much I value and respect them. And I definitely emphasize that like we're a team, and like that is ultimately my approach is like, hey, this is a team thing, right? Like we're a team, and I'm actively seeking their input. I empower them to like take ownership of their work, and like I really want to know what their thoughts are, because like you shared, they're there more than us, right? Even if we're in person, they're there more than us. Like they're there with that client depending on how often, they have services. Sometimes they're there every day. Sometimes they're there every day for like 5 hours, right? So it's like, yes, like you are a huge part in this client's life. Like, even if it's like short, right? Like I want your input. Like I need your input. So I recognize that without, their dedication and hard work, we wouldn't be able to make progress with our clients, like we need them. We truly need them. And I always wish I could do more for my RBTs and BTs. Like that is something that like I wish I could do. But I try my best by incorporating them and acknowledging their importance and involving them in the process of, what they find to be more engaging, or what, is motivated by them, and, committed to their goals. Like I want their input on goals. So when I write reports too, like I'm like, hey, I'm thinking about this goal. Like what are your thoughts? And if they're like, I love that, or I don't know, like I definitely take all that into consideration. And I'll ask them too, like, do you have any ideas for goals? Like what are some things that you notice? And one of the things I'm big on is like, let's say it's a goal that like we can't do. I explain that to them, like, oh, this is why we can't do that. I don't just shut them down, and I think that's definitely very helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Something that I say a lot is I'm nothing without my technicians, right? Because I can write this gorgeous and beautiful individualized service plan, and I could write an amazing behavior intervention plan on their behaviors, and I could write these fantastic goals, and I could talk about progress, but without my technicians being on the ground, I don't have this plan executed. And on top of that too, you mentioned a really strong point about, you know, incorporating your technicians, asking them questions. I love asking my technicians those types of questions. You know, for me, it's like, I'm only there so much and I might have an idea, but if I'm not asking for input from my technicians, if I'm not saying, okay, like, what are you noticing? Or, you know, what are some things that you find that might be really good for our client to work on? You know, I feel like that's where I become less of a compassionate supervisor and more of like a robot supervisor. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you know, and so for me, like, I definitely understand that. And like on my end, because, you know, I work remote hybrid, I actually have like a team chat with all of my technicians, and I use that for announcements, but I also use it as like a thank you forum. Like, thank you for everything that you've done for our clients. Thank you for all the hard work that you've done. Just to give an idea, we just recently launched a new data collection app that we switched over from one data collection to another one, and it's been tough to get through. But that being said, you know, it's one of those things where I use that, like, that forum to say, look, you know, you guys have been incredibly patient. You guys have really been on top of things. I really appreciate all that you're doing for our friends. And I think just it's a stark reminder that we need to uplift our staff that much more and be able to say, you're doing such amazing work, and I'm so proud to be your supervisor.
Exactly. I love that. And I love that you do a group chat. I'm going to have to steal that idea, because usually I'll just, like, you know, send like a group email here and there, or I'll do like I'll just message them individually. But I love that, like, putting them all in a chat and doing that. That's a great idea.
Thank you. Yeah, I do the individualized messages as well. But, you know, the group chat is definitely something where I can just be able to say, like, you guys are doing amazing. Thank you so much for what you're doing for our friends, because without you guys, I would not be able to do the job that I'm doing. So for me, it's like, it's a big deal, you know?
Definitely.
Yeah. And that being said, kind of speaking of building and keeping that strong, consistent team, what advice do you have for BCBAs on, you know, being able to do that? Because remember, too, like, our field has a lot of turnover.
It does. And,
you know, what can we do better at? Like, how can we go about that?
Yeah, I think to build and maintain a strong, consistent team, you know, I would definitely encourage BCBAs to prioritize consistency, empathy, and open-mindedness, because I think that showing your, like, team members that you genuinely care and about their well-being and success is ultimately, you know, you're going to have that, like, open relationship, but, like, you know, listening, like, actively, to, like, your tech's ideas, you know, and then, you know, working, sorry, I lost my train of thought. listening, you know, to their ideas and perspectives, and being willing to, like, consider, like, alternate approaches. I think recognize that you don't have all the answers, and, like, being humble enough to learn from others is the biggest thing that, you know, we could do as BCBAs, because, like, I always want to learn. I'm always open to, like, hey, what can I be doing better? Like, I love feedback. Like, feedback makes you better. And I think that if you're, you know, humble enough to, like, accept that, like, I think, you know, that's going to make you consistent and strong.
Absolutely.
But by definitely putting your team's needs first and fostering a collaborative, like, environment, you'll build that trust and loyalty and a high performing team. And I think that's what, you know, we need in this world. Like, we need in this ABA world is, like, consistency and, you know, loyalty, you know, in a sense. And I think that you have to, like, you have to work for that. Like, and, like, every relationship, you know, you have to work for that, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's so true. And, you know, again, it really emphasizes the importance of, like, you know, a couple things, actually. Number one, you have to respect your technicians just the same way as you would respect your clients. And number two, you know, you mentioned feedback. You know, I've been in this field for over 11 or 12 years now, and
That's
I've been a
amazing.
BCBA for close to nine. And it's one of those things where it's like, just because I have been around for so long doesn't mean that I don't need any more feedback. It doesn't mean that I'm not going to learn. It doesn't mean that I shouldn't learn. It actually means I really do need to keep learning. You know,
Yeah.
I need to keep doing this. Like this, I have to keep going, you know, because if I'm not going to keep going, if I'm not going to, you know, find myself in this position of, you know, actually like trying to expand my scope and trying to learn more about ABA and learn more about the things that we're doing, what am I really doing? You
Yeah.
know?
And that's huge. Like that's such a huge thing. And I think that, you know, sometimes BCBAs who have been in this field for so long tend to kind of like forget that, like to be like open. So I love that you said that. Like it's so true. Like you have to, because everything changes, like, you know, the world changes so constantly, you know, we got to keep up with like, you know, our timeline, right? So it's like, it's so important. And I love that you said that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very true. It's something that I've learned. It's something I've learned for sure. Oh man. Well, let's talk a little bit about technology, because technology is one of those things,
Oh
you know,
gosh.
yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. You know, telehealth supervision involves technology. And, you know, of course, with technology, there can be issues, there can be connection issues, or, you know, sometimes things shut down. What are some common tech issues you've run into, and how have you been able to handle them before?
Yeah, so I think like the most common is like connection issues, right? Like the internet shuts off, or like, you know, there's like a power outage and like you can't connect to the session back, right? So like that's, you know, sometimes a barrier. When that happens, you know, I just make sure, you know, my staff's okay, and then like I'll plan to like reschedule my visit depending on how far into the visit I was. Or like, you know, my staff's devices die, or, you know, their battery pack isn't working. And you know, just like what I try to do to kind of avoid those issues is I plan ahead. So I'm really big at like having my schedule done for the month. So then that way I can, each week I'm communicating, hey, like I'll be back on this day, this is the time. 'Cause I find that by doing that, they're a little bit more prepared. And I get it. Like, you know, sometimes I mean, I do have staff that are like always prepared, but
Yeah.
I can't expect every staff to be like that, you know? So, and I don't expect every staff to be like that. So I know that like, if there's some type of connection issue or something like that, like I do have my staff that I can like just hop on a session like that same day. And then I know staff that I can't. But again, I listen to them, you know, if they tell me like, hey, like, I can't bring my device every day because the neighborhood that, you know, my client is in isn't the safest. You know, I take all of that into consideration because, yeah, like I wouldn't want to leave, you know, precious, precious things in my car, you know. So I take all that into consideration, and, you know, I just try to plan ahead and plan accordingly.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and I can tell you, connection issues are definitely something I've ran into as well. Also, I think the same thing when it comes to just like, you know, the phone dying, or if like the connection over at the other person's place, because like a lot of the times on my end, like my connection is pretty okay, like at least 95% of the time. But we may have technicians that go into rural areas where Wi-Fi is either, you know, just really finicky, or the service in that area is also really finicky. So it's one of those things where it's like, it's hard to navigate sometimes.
Oh, definitely. Yeah,
you
definitely.
know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Any memorable, oh no, tech moments
Oh
that you
gosh.
can laugh about now?
Yeah. So I have a funny story. So, when I first started with, like working remote in a different state, you know, I was getting used to like the different time zones. And I was doing a lot of initial assessments at first. So I would accept these initial assessments. A lot of times though, I, you know, because I am 100% Hispanic, I just don't speak Spanish, unfortunately. So a lot of times like I get like referrals for like Spanish speaking, right? But, you know, when I would get those, I would say, you know, I don't speak Spanish. But however, this one time I got one, and they're like, "Oh no, the mom speaks English. She's willing to do the assessment in English." And I said, "Okay." So I started the assessment, and again online, right? And I'm explaining things, and I'm trying my best to explain it. And I do speak like somewhat broken Spanish, so I was trying my best to do like the assessment on online. And in the best way I could by using Google Translate while being remote, but it just like wasn't working. So I had to like come to that realization that like, okay, like this isn't gonna work. I need to make sure that this parent, is provided, a translator. And I didn't want, to like further the assessment, but it worked out. But it's funny because like I was like, well, this is new. I'm online. I could use Google Translate. I can make this work, but I'm so glad that I didn't, because again, I think I would have felt like really guilty doing that. But that was like a moment that I was like, okay, I can't do everything. Like that was that moment that, oh man, like Lauren, you can't do everything.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's one of those things where it's like, oh, you think you can do it all, but it's like, it's not the easiest thing. We gotta,
Exactly. Yeah.
yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, let's go ahead and dive into our second code word. And that second code word is somebody that we have talked about a little bit on this episode, Miss Rachel. So that is MISS space RAC. HEL. That is Miss Rachel. All right. Last couple questions I have for you. A little bit about, like the benefits and the challenges of telehealth and remote work. Tell us a little bit about like those benefits and challenges that you have personally experienced.
Yeah, so like definitely the unexpected benefits of telehealth supervision is like the flexibility it brings to my personal life. As someone who, works for East Coast time zone, but I'm in Pacific Standard Time, I'm able to like wrap up my workday at a reasonable hour each day, and enjoy like a traditional like afternoon evening with my family. I'm able to like make dinner, and then like have dinner with my kids and my husband. This flexibility has been like a game changer for me and my work-life balance, I would say. So I'm definitely grateful for that opportunity to be able to prioritize my family without sacrificing professional responsibilities. Because coming back after having kids was like really hard for me, and I definitely wanted something that I wanted. I didn't want to give up my career because I worked so hard to be a BCBA. And I'm very passionate about it, but I don't want to miss out on things with my children. So I felt like telehealth has definitely given me that ability to be a mom 100%, and to be a BCBA at my best that I can be,
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that for that reason, especially like there is a lot of flexibility that comes with, being remote. I know like on my end, for me, if I'm ever feeling too overwhelmed by everything and everybody, I am able to go to my room and just kind of turn off. And that's really nice. And also, while I don't have children, I have pugs, I have dogs, that I could easily go take care of during that time too. So it's like I don't have to worry about leaving my house. So that's definitely one of the nice things that I've at least seen on my end.
Definitely. I definitely agree with you on that de-escalation in your room thing. I definitely do that a lot too. Like, okay, like I'm done with this session. Let me go get a break. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly. What have you found to be more of like the challenges of telehealth?
So definitely the building rapport with the client, because again, like it's not easy at first, right? Like you can try something and like the client doesn't care. So particularly, they're a little hesitant at first, right? And a lot of times you get like clients that don't really like you shared, like don't really care that you're on screen. So that's definitely hard, right? Because like I want to be able to model things for my staff as the best that I can. However, I what I found to like kind of help with that is those regular parent meetings. They're very valuable because I learned so much about the family, the client, And by learning more about the client through their parents, I can gain a deeper understanding of their needs and tailor my approach to like better support them. So while I take time to establish like a strong connection, parent meetings have been instrumental in helping me build trust and rapport with my clients remotely. But it's not easy. It's not always easy. You know, it's like I'm trying out for something, right? And I'm like constantly trying out, just to like, you know, get my client to engage with me. And, you know, I've had my moments, I've had good moments. I have clients that are easily, you know, acknowledge me. And then I have clients that like, don't really care to interact with me, but like, I'm constantly, you know, trying my best to interact with them. And, that's been hard.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can definitely understand that. Especially like when it's those clients that are like, I see you on the camera, but either I don't care or I just don't like the fact that you're on the camera. You know, definitely understand that.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Well, kind of looking ahead, you know, looking into the future of ABA, do you think that telehealth will remain a large and major part of ABA supervision? And whether or not you feel that way, what would you like to see change?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think that now after doing telehealth for almost 5 years, oh my goodness, it for me, I feel it's played a significant role in ABA, and I'm definitely in favor of it. You know, having the option to provide a service both in person and online definitely expands like our reach and allows us to offer more flexibility with scheduling, ultimately like, you know, enabling us to fulfill clients' hours more effectively. And that's huge, because I think like in person, that was always a challenge, like, you know, yeah, utilizing all those hours, because there's so many factors that contribute to like not being able to do that, right? We have cancellations, we have you're commuting, right? So like anything can happen while commuting, right? And like it doesn't work out. So I do think that like I do, and I hope that, you know, ABA allows us to keep telehealth. And I think by like embracing this remote approach, you know, personally, I felt like I could provide high quality services that meet the unique needs of each of my clients, regardless of their location or circumstances. So I definitely am 100%, you know, a believer in remote.
Yes, absolutely. I love that. And I definitely agree that, you know, that remote model is just so great to have for so many reasons. And I think it's one of those things where, you know, I don't see it going away. I really don't. You know, I'm more of a hybrid person myself because I love the flexibility of remote. But then hybrid, I just love being able to go in person and see my clients. But yeah, I think having that remote component is always just so vital, because, you know, when it comes to work-life balance and when it comes to just being able to take care of yourself and take care of your own needs and, you know, that, and also too, you know, you mentioned hour fulfillment, you know, we can fulfill more hours by being remote. So exactly. I definitely agree with you on that.
Yeah. And I personally think, again, it depends, you know, on where you're at, but like there's less burnout because you're not driving so much, you know, and you're not only are you not driving so much, I just feel it's a little bit more of a realistic day-to-day schedule that you could fulfill being remote.
Absolutely. I mean, I even deal with techs that, you know, have a lot of driving on their schedule, and it's so much. I feel for them because, you know, that's not just, you know, putting money into their car and, you know, making sure that their gas tank is always filled and making sure that their car is always, you know, fixed. But it's just, it's a lot of mental energy on top of that. And that can be a lot.
Definitely.
So, well, Lauren, I really appreciate your time today. I really am so happy that I got to talk to you all about all things telehealth and all things telehealth supervision. Where can our listeners find you?
Yeah, so my listeners can find me, my best friend, she is starting her own company. So I'm helping her along the way with like the remote part, but you can find her company on Instagram for Adventure Awaits.
Ooh, fun. I love that. We will be sure to put that information. And again, thank you so much, Lauren. I really appreciate your time and coming on to the podcast today. And I want to say thank you to everyone who listened today. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman, and I can't wait to tune into the next one with you guys. Bye.